Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are not recommendations, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.
Mina and Scott O'Neill are professional property investors. They run a buyer's agency for commercial property investors and have to date helped more than 2,100 clients purchase well over $1.2 billion worth of Australian real estate. They started their own property investing early and have just published their first book, Rethink Property Investment. I'm Julia Newbold, Managing Editor of Money Magazine, and today I welcome Mina and Scott O'Neill to tell us a bit about their journey to financial independence and wealth. Scott, you start the book by saying, 31 degrees, sun on my face, sand between my toes, life was pretty relaxed as we lay on a beach in Kos in the Greek islands. It was 2016 and Mina and I were relishing a six-month break from Australia. I was hooked. And then you said you thought you'd hit the jackpot, you'd retired from your day job at age 28, and at that time you owned 25 residential and commercial properties scattered across four states. Now, you say you worked hard, you saved for many years, and you obsessed over every property decision. But now at 28, I can imagine wondering, how hard did you work and how did you build up such an enviable property portfolio at such a young age?
So it sort of goes back to, look, both Mina and I were working from a very young age, did university, but we always held part-time jobs during that time. So this was 2016. We bought our first property in 2010, which was 6 years prior. We used about 60 grand cash savings that we, it took us about 5 years of, part-time jobs working. And as soon as I got a full-time job as an engineer, that's immediately when I went to the bank and they lent off it. That house in Sydney was 480 grand. It was a dual income, so I had a house and granny flat, so it was renting about 660 a week, 480 purchase price, pretty good yield for Sydney. And that resulted in about a 10 grand passive income. So after all the mortgages, maintenance, all that kind of stuff, it was like a little 10 grand pay rise. And then obviously Sydney boomed after that period. So that $480,000 house, it took about 5-6 years to get to $1 million. And then we obviously saved and worked, and we bought another property in Maroubra at the time. And we used the equity out of Sutherland, our first property that we bought, and that allowed us to buy more. And we started buying things with good cash flow. So that's what we did differently to, I guess, our friends at the time.
And so how did you know to do that? Because most people just buy a property that they kind of like the look of and they think this might, make money in a few years and it's earning a fair yield. But to have got somewhere that you could have had a passive income already, did you have some sort of teaching to get you to that point?
No, it was more of a defensive play, because 2010, there was all these stories about 40% crashes in the market. So I thought, if I get something with good cash flow, it's at least if it doesn't grow, it's not the end of the world. So it was a defensive play. And then obviously when we started getting that surplus income, it was addictive to repeat. Why not find another one like this? And it led us to buying other multiple income assets like small unit blocks in regional areas. And this is all before we got into commercial, and the yields were great. We bought this one in our third property in Port Macquarie. It was 425 grand and it was renting for 800 a week. And that was about a 19 or 20 odd grand surplus income. So it was just finding assets like that. And at some point it just got harder and harder, and that's where we jumped ship into commercial.
So when you're looking at the yields, where do you get the research from, and how do you start to look at that? I mean, a lot of people just look at something aesthetically. They're not really, taking into account.
Well, initially it was just searching on realestate.com and domain, just multiple incomes. Like you'd type in keywords like granny for granny flat or jewel, or look for four bathrooms under a certain pass. Like there's these little ways to know there was more than one income coming. Income was something I used to Google, multiple income. So you think about the keywords in real estate ads, whatever would associate itself to a multiple income was our initial search. And you didn't need research other than making sure the rents were at fair market value. And yeah, it was just about finding that odd property that had an extra income or two out of it for a decent area. And that was a strategy that we first followed to actually get more income than we should have out of the property.
And what were the interest rates that you were paying when you first got into the market?
I think it was, we're talking sixes, maybe even seven back then. And yeah, we went through like many different banks and all that, you know, because we sort of spread our risk between banks at the time. And, you know, between each time we bought a property, it'd be a different bank. So yeah, look, obviously over the years, those interest rates crawling down, which was another little bonus for us. And yeah, so that's, it definitely started off on the high side, and that's why it was quite good to actually still get income even at those higher interest rates.
And so when you were getting those good returns, did you have a risk strategy? Like what happens if suddenly, I don't know, Port Macquarie, something happens there and you've not got that rented, or some of your other properties lose tenants?
Well, there were always the types of properties that would do well regardless of the economy. So using Sutherland as an example, it was 700 metres from the train station, and the two rentals out of that were like the two cheapest on the market. So if a recession hit, if anything, there'd be more people looking for a cheap rental. That's what we thought. And basically buying affordable rentals was, it worked. So Port Macquarie, we bought a place right close to the beach and it was very cheap. So even if the economy was terrible, there'd be, you know, effectively, a safety net rent, which would probably always attract people to that property. And when times were good, then rents would go up.
And so, Mina, was any of this stressful to you, thinking that you've got all this money invested in property and, you know, what if things change?
Yeah, so, I mean, of course, you know, you always preempt that something might change in the future, but like Scott said as well, we always look at things like when we invested with Sutherland, close to a train station, making sure there's lots of food around, you know, walking distance to locations, you know, population growth, all that kind of stuff. Schools are really important. So that's all the factors that we were factoring in when you'd invest in those particular properties. The same with Port Macquarie as well. Hop and a skip away from town, you know, you don't have to have a car, you can walk to it. Medical centres and everything are all around you. So those factors are definitely coming into play.
And how well did you know each area that you bought property in?
So ultimately, we do our research. We make sure we check all everything about the suburb, whether it's, you know, infrastructure, jobs available, you know, whether it's an ageing population there, you know, if are there aged care facilities around, all those details, all those major details are something that we normally would research ourselves. Obviously getting to know the market as well around there is something Scott's really across it every day on a day-to-day basis. So that's, I guess, something that we kind of look to checking out.
And how long did it take to make each decision when you've got to do all that research?
Oh, I mean, for me personally, obviously we check that all the numbers are stacking up. So, you know, you check your rates, you've got your, you know, your location, your infrastructure, your whether there's schools, the availability of jobs, everything kind of comes into play in that respect. So when you're making a decision to invest in a property, you can't exactly sit there waiting, you know, to make sure that every single chicken's in line. You just need to make sure that your finances are in check. You need to act quite quick sometimes because those investments aren't going to stay there available at all times.
And have there been times where you've been really close to getting something and then something just doesn't add up and you've got to step away?
And yeah, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes, I mean, if that does happen, sometimes, you know, you want to maybe you do put that offer in and say, you know, we need a due diligence time and check, be able to check that amount of time. Can we extend that time to do the relevant checks, do the building and pest inspections, do some the research that we require in time to make sure that we've made the right decision? And I mean, sometimes if your gut feeling kind of says to you, probably not, there's a few things that are not stacking up correctly, whether it's numbers wise, whether it's locality, whether it's, you know, of a dodgy deal sometimes, who knows, but you know, things like that are obviously accounted for. If it doesn't stack up, then I wouldn't destroy myself to push myself to go get it. I would make sure everything's in line before I do make that right decision. So that's, yeah.
And working together, do you think of the same things, or are you a bit of a yin and yang type couple that one of you's looking at one part of the investment and the other's looking at something else?
Probably say Scott's very, you know, I think Scott he looks at it from a perspective of, oh, this is a great investment. You know, we can, this can make a huge addition to the portfolio. This is how it can diversify it. And I kind of go, okay, well, that's great. What's the implications of this, that, you know, all the details behind it? You know, have we thought about what it would do to our portfolio? Would it, and would we understand how it would take us to the next level? So I kind of look at everything from a, funny enough, from a negative perspective, and I check out all the negatives before I see the positives, because I do like to make sure that, you know, if things were to go wrong, what's the worst case scenario, and making sure things are all right before that. So
I don't think that's very negative. Yeah. I mean, I always think the positives are obvious. It's yeah. the negatives that you've got to do the focus on. So when did you both realise that property investing was going to be your focus and your way forward?
Probably as soon as I started full-time work for me, because I went from the university life of, you know, you get 2-3 months off every year to travel, and then, yes, straight into 60-hour weeks, and I thought, this sucks, you know. and then, like, I was on construction sites like engineering and worked all sorts of weekends and shutdown periods, and it was just – it was a shock to the system, and I just thought, yeah, there's got to be a better way. Like, and it was not to do what we did. It was more just, it would be nice to retire at 50, not 65. Like, it was that type of mindset. And building these little, I guess, a side business or a side property portfolio, whatever you want to call it, it was a way of just bringing retirement earlier. And that's, yeah, so work definitely drove that into.
I think it's interesting because for me it's very much, you know, I, you know, working day in and day out, and I kind of just went, you know, my mum taught me a really valuable lesson that, you know, life is very short, you know, and if you can find a way to enjoy it with the people that you love the most, that's what really stands forward to me. So for me it was more so, you know, working and trying to find a way to gain back that time to be able to spend it with family and friends. My mum passed away, so... you know, that time is so valuable, and that's something, I guess, that resonates every day. When I think of portfolio, I think of time. So
in your book you say, well, you got to 28 and you could have retired. So why didn't you?
We had a taste of it. Like, we took 6 months off and we bought one-way ticket to Europe and, you know, had a great summer in Europe, and it was sort of at the end of that summer where it got a bit strange because everyone was sort of left, you know, all the summer locations were in Greece and went to Spain and all that, and it was all, everyone was going home back to Australia, or and we just thought, what, do we spend winter here or come back to Australia? And yeah, it was kind of a little bit of a lost feeling, if anything. And we had a good break, and I guess that made us think, all right, well, got to do something. And at the same time, we had people asking, why did you quit your job, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, they asked for help buying similar properties. So we created this accidental business, Rethink Investing, which was helping people buy the same types of properties we were buying. And, you know, every single year except for last year, due to COVID, we've spent 3 months overseas. So we definitely try to keep that lifestyle going. But we look, the business is growing as well, so it's sort of now taking more and more time. Yeah, we definitely don't want to lose sight of the original goal. It's just, I guess we got the choice to do it, and that makes a hell of a big difference, I think.
If you enjoy what you're doing, you know, and like Scott said as well, you know, we do what we did for ourselves for the people around us, and we originally started with friends, and then it kind of rolled on from there, and, you know, we kind of went, oh, we can do something with this. And, I don't think I can imagine myself sitting back and not doing anything. I'd still want myself to be able to be involved in something and to help someone do something that I find passionate and I can see and I've tested myself. That's a really big reward in itself. So
when we talked to the FIRE community a couple of weeks ago, they were saying that, you know, they'd calculated that you needed to have 25 times what income you needed each year to survive. And do you think that you've got a set number, or do you think that your living expenses go up as you're earning more and doing better? What's your aim?
Yeah, look, we and that was the funny thing after that Europe trip. We, you know, at the time it was about 180,000 or 190,000 passive income, and even after all the traveling and plane tickets and all that, there was still more rent coming in than we were expending. So it was a quite powerful feeling. It felt kind of exciting, you know, that we did well, all that stuff. But yes, then when we came back to Sydney, you know, you've got to buy a house in Sydney and living expenses do go up. So you sort of go with it. But yeah, look, it was like we built our passive income from the properties is just under 500K now. So that's after mortgages and all that kind of stuff. So I guess it means we operate business differently. We're not driving this business just to get every little inch of profit out of it. And that's why we literally have gone overseas for 3 months every year because, you know, productivity drops or, you know, I'm not working, you know, buying properties or anything like that as much. So it's just we're very relaxed with it all and because of that. So we don't really have a number or a goal or anything more. It's more just, like, I guess the progression of moving forward is the driver now. Not so much got to get this many or that new income. It's not about that anymore.
So coming back to your business, Rethink Property, it's as a buyer's agent. What actually is a buyer's agent and what do you do for people and what type of people come to see you and what service do you provide them with?
So we help people buy mostly just commercial properties these days. So a lot of people, we work from anywhere from entry-level investors buying a $300,000 warehouse all the way up to high net worth individuals or syndicates buying $10+ million shopping centres or industrial complexes. So we specialise in industrial property, medical and multi-tenant retail. So that might be your neighbourhood shopping centres. And why we chase those types of investments is we see the best income. They're very secure in times of COVID. Like industrial has grown in terms of its demand. As so many businesses have moved online, there's more need for logistics as everyone's sitting clicking Amazon purchases. So you've got to store that in a warehouse. Manufacturing is coming online more in Australia again. So that again helps it. So we target these types of properties that do well when the times aren't that great as well. So, and yeah, we've grown our network. So we buy about 70% off market. So people come to us for new opportunities that they couldn't find themselves. And that's what a good buyer's agent should do. They bring them opportunities that are, you know, high quality, negotiated, off market. And that's our job. We represent the client to negotiate the properties, do the due diligence. And yeah, and obviously a specialist in the commercial field, which is, to my knowledge, a bit of a first because there's hundreds of residential buyer's agents. But when it comes to commercial, there's a handful of them that do it on the side, but not specialize in it.
And so what gave you the skills to be able to research these properties, I guess, you know, to start with your own and then, you know, now as the buyer's agent?
So to start, like one of the reasons we wrote the book is back when we started trying to understand commercial property, there was no resources in Australia. I remember I was just reading stuff from the US, like articles online, like difference between industrial versus office, and it was really tough. So we looked around for about 18 months before even putting a bid on a commercial property. And how we learnt about it was honestly just huge amounts of time in it, like looking over thousands of properties online, talking to agents, finding out how their previous businesses went in the last recession. And it was just time, really. And we've helped our clients purchase, it's about 2,100 properties now these days. So about 1.2 billion in what, like the book says 1 billion, but, you know, we're buying more every month. And that's the true experience. It's just being in it every day and not losing touch of the market, which is one of the reasons I wanted to be a buyer's agent in the first place, because once you stop buying as an individual, you might have 12 months off from buying again, and then you forget what the prices are. Or so it was a way of staying in tune with the market, helping others. So it's just cumulative research, really.
Amina, how have you found the experience of doing the research?
It's been interesting. I mean, on my end, I do more the operational side of the background of the business. So even though I did at the start off as a buyer's agent myself as well, a little bit with Scott, my, I guess, forte in the research is building the business behind the scenes, I guess, a little bit. I guess in general, I guess that was my position in the whole thing.
Well, it's a whole different business for you now,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Exactly. So starting from this new position, you know, coming back from a background of marketing, advertising, coming into this is completely different. So, but it's the passion about it. It's always researching every day about it, being able to have that knowledge to be able to educate your client or be able to educate the next person coming on board in the business to help them progress as well. And believe in it is a big thing as well. So,
and have there been any impediments with getting clients because you're so young yourselves?
Sometimes. I mean, this is going back a couple of years ago for myself. They would question, you know, and say, you know, well, you know, how do you know this? How did you find this? You know, how did you do it? You know, and it's all about the knowledge and the background research that you can give them to secure, make them feel secure as well, knowing that you actually have done enough research yourself, has done the actual groundwork, plus you've been in it, you've tested it, you've got all your contacts over a long period of time to understand the environment that it actually is to be able to help that person on board. So, yeah.
And how long did it take to get the book written and out there?
Oh, we started probably about 12 months.
Probably longer.
Yeah, longer, maybe 18 months. It was just like little, like, you know, after work you just dot down a paragraph and then just keep doing that every night. So the trouble with the writing the book was you forget what you wrote previously. So you have to come back and go, oh, did we repeat ourselves? So that was the trickiest part, just not repeating yourself or just trying to keep the structure going. And then just making it flow. And like we ended up going with Wiley and that were really good to sort of help, you know, clean up all the spelling mistakes and stuff like that. But
it's hard not when you don't have a structure and then someone brings in the structure and you go, oh, yeah, this is exactly what I'm trying to say on paper, you know, but it's all in your head and it's hard.
It's just like a big never-ending uni assignment, you know, like but it dragged out over a lot of months and that was the hard bit. So, yeah, not rushing to do another one, that's for sure.
Has it helped your business?
Yeah, well, look, it's sold nearly 6,000 copies in a month and a half. So it's really busy and yeah, look, it's making it more mainstream as well because everyone knows residential property, but commercial is just a little bit of a forgotten part of the economy. And a lot of these properties we buy are, you know, under $1 million. They might be $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, which is less than a Sydney apartment price. So most people don't realise they can buy this stuff if they want.
No, absolutely not. And I think the attraction with property for most people is you understand what a house and a unit is and you know what you need as a bathroom and a kitchen and so on, and it makes it very simple for people and they tend to buy in regions they know and, you know, suburbs they know. But when you say commercial, it opens up a whole new world of, you know, what you said, retail or industrial or, you know, professional, and I think that can be quite daunting. And then when you're going out to a region that people are not familiar with, I think the help that you can provide is very worthwhile.
I mean, and that's the thing, I think when we were writing the book, it's getting that knowledge for people not to feel that anxiety when they're trying to deal with something new, because it is always daunting dealing with something that's not out of, you know, or it's outside of the scope of work or outside of your backyard area where you're familiar with. So, you know, giving that person the ability to understand it a bit better would probably give someone the ability to buy it a bit better as well. So
would you say that it's a good investment for people with no other property investments? Would you go straight into that now?
Oh, look, most often not. And this is where we sit down with clients and say, look, if they've got a very strong business or a very stable job, like, for example, we've got a lot of doctor clients, you know, they might be on a high income, but they're looking to retire in, say, 10, 15 years, you're probably not going to replace their income with houses. You probably never will, even if you pay them all off. You know, you buy $5 million of property and you're getting a 3% gross yield. It's not an efficient use of your money. But you put even half that money into commercial and you're going to get a lot more income. So it's an income replacement type thing. So, yes, it might suit someone like that. But if you're a first-time, you know, uni grad and you've got your, you know, you're getting $70,000 in income a year and you've saved up $100,000 deposit over a few years, would you go commercial? Probably not. It's cut your teeth in residential, learn how investing works, the ups and downs, you know, losing a tenant, finding a new one, dealing with maintenance, all that stuff is, it's almost like part of it. You just got to get thick skin from it. And if you're, yeah, that commercial is something that you should probably consider after a couple of properties. And It just depends on what stage of life you're at. You know, if you're looking to replace an income quickly, get into this. If you want to invest over 20 years and enjoy growth and you're happy to work away for a while, then residential's obviously a nice slow way of building wealth as well. And none of this is get rich quick. This is all, you know, it's a get rich slow scheme. But right now the markets are kind of giving us a bit of a free kick too, because there is significant growth for our, like, commercial assets. Like, we're talking 12 to 15% growth rates for most commercial assets, because there's a yield compression phenomenon happening. So people are basically using money to buy more commercial property. The demand for it's increasing, but stock is about 50% down. So as there's more people fighting over limited stock, even with all the COVID problems we've seen, it's still just increasing in value quickly. There are some exceptions, like maybe CBD office space or fashion, like high-end type retail, that are struggling, but the bread and butter properties like warehouses, medical centres, they're just going through the roof at the moment.
And if you had to nominate one of your own properties that you think was your best investment, what would it be?
probably, I'd say almost our first commercial. Like, we bought a little mini supermarket and a fish and chip shop. And why it was our best, it was a bit of an aha moment. So the business there had been there for 20 plus years. So it was two properties on two titles. One of them had a fish and chip shop that's been there for 20 years, and the other had a supermarket. It was a small one, like sort of 400 or 500 square meters. And we thought, all right, no matter what's happening in the economy, people are going to still eat their fish and chips and still go to a grocery shop. But there was only 9 months left on the grocery shop, so it was a risk. So we got a bit of a discount because of that. But then after we settled on it, we went to the tenant and renewed that lease and turned it from a 9-month lease to a 5-year lease. And we got a valuer out there, and the price went up about 15%. And I thought, oh, that's pretty cool, because we've created 15% equity, which is what most developers are searching after 9 months of building and DAs and stuff. We've just done it with a contract, a lease renewal. And that was just like, it was like an accounting trick, which created equity as well as security. And then we thought, oh, this is better than residential after that.
I think in general, like, you know, when we did go for it, we kind of just went, oh, you know, the leases are longer, you know, all your outgoings are covered by your tenants, you know, and we kind of went, okay, this is pretty amazing. And the fact that we got that kind of a, you know, percentage rise, it was just too good kind of thing to not do it again.
And so, have you had any bad experiences?
I'd probably say not in commercial from what I can see. However, I mean, we've had... Our residential ones have had occasional ups and downs. And, I mean, we've had very odd tenants in there, you know, in situations where you'd have to go to the tribunal and not want to do things the wrong way and the right way. And so a lot of things were up and down in one or two of them. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they all nut out. When you've got a good agent as well that's on the board as well, they'll know what to do. They'll have your back in that respect as well. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I wouldn't say too many other things have ever really gone wrong, so... Can you think of any, Scott?
Yeah, look, probably just the residential side, because we own a lot of them, and that means a lot of maintenance. And like, even just the other day, we got $16,000 we've got to replace a balcony. There's a $4,000 bill in another property because of plumbing issue in the garden. There was another $2,000 or $3,000 for little bits and pieces. And this is all in 1 month. And I'm thinking, oh, well, this is not really great use of you know, your money when you're not even getting cash flow out of it. So look, the commercial touch wood's been very smooth. There's COVID really didn't cause problems. Had a couple people at the start saying we want rent discounts, so we issued them like 30% discounts for March and April when it first hit Australian shores, COVID. That was in 2020. And then, you know, we all remember things got pretty secure. Everything was pretty solid after that. Like, there was JobKeeper announced in, I think it was April 2020. So that gave confidence a lot back to business. So people just got on with it. And the lockdowns, we don't own any properties in Victoria. So that's a good thing, because there was big pain down there. Yeah. Most of ours are in Brisbane, Sydney, Perth, and like particularly Brisbane and Adelaide, and those three cities have been fantastic with their COVID.
And is all your investment in property?
Oh, we've got a share portfolio as well, but it's almost like a thing on the side. I don't claim to know much about shares, but yes, we do have that as well.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Where you buy, what type of business your property is associated with, and what the relative risk and reward for your type of property is will all determine how profitable your investment will be. For more information, pick up a copy of Rethink Property Investment by Scott and Mina O'Neill. Scott and Mina's book is also featured in the June issue of Money Magazine.
Thanks for listening to the Friends of Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider your personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any of the content without further independent financial research and advice.